Sheila Zielinski Show, the truth behind the headlines, prophecy, and the deeper things of God. Now, here is your host, Sheila Zielinski.
The Green New Deal appears to be the number one headline in the news, and it is not going anywhere. But is this New Deal really new? This green agenda is not about saving the planet, as its creators are quick to espouse. It is instead the re-implementation of an ancient pagan imperial doctrine that seeks to destroy the world's nation-states, implement global governance, and drastically reduce the world's population. The new religion of Gaia is in fact a revival of paganism that rejects Christianity altogether and considers its followers to be its biggest enemy. Gaia is a cunning mixture of science, paganism, Eastern mysticism, and feminism, and has made this pagan cult the fastest growing religion on the planet. It views the Christian faith as the only obstacle preventing the formation of a global religion centered on uniting all forms of life around the goddess of Mother Earth. In her critically acclaimed book Green Gospel, author, researcher, and broadcaster Sheila Zielinski demolishes what you think you know about the Green New Deal. She exposes how the claim that the human-induced global warming and the green agenda were diabolical plans deliberately hatched decades ago by the UN and are the greatest frauds of our time. Green Gospel unpacks the greatest deception of our era and takes you through the astonishing who, what, when, where, and why of the Green New Deal and explains what it's really all about. Get your copy of Green Gospel today.
Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to the Sheila Zielinski Show.
Folks, I'm really excited to have back very good friend Mark Morano from Climate Depot. His information is up on your screen. Of course, we all know the big climate cult confab was just in Dubai. And of course, to report back, because he was there, boots on the ground, is the one and only Mark Morano. Mark, what an incredible 20 years you've been going to these clown shows. We're just chomping at the bit to know, lay out what happened in Dubai, first of all, Mark, and welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot, Sheila. Appreciate it. Well, this was my 18th of the last 20 United Nations climate summits. They're called COP28. And no, that is not the 28th COP to jump out of a cake at a bachelorette party. It's called the Conference of Parties. It's such a strange name, COP28. This meeting, probably more than any other, was the Great Reset Summit, because you had the World Health Organization there. You had this whole agenda of the collapse of energy, food, transportation, and free speech all on display. And they even had sustainable fashion events at this, Sheila, where they had a fashion show, red carpet. I attended one. I interviewed the keynote speaker, and they defended this Mayor Bloomberg, Google, IKEA-sponsored report of the C40's mayor calling for 3 new items of clothing per person per year by 2030. And you can buy more than that, but they have to be sustainable clothing, like organic hemp or something. He's calling for the phase out of all fossil fuels and the beginning of the end. And it got to the point where the head, he literally said there was no science to support the UN net zero agenda. And if we actually did follow it, we'd all be living in caves. The conference was so disconnected and psychotic that the host country presidency of this United Nations climate summit was a man named Sultan Al-Jaber, the United Arab Emirates. And he gave a speech on the opening day, or gave an interview on the opening day of this summit, where he said there's no science to support the UN climate agenda, the net zero agenda. And if we actually did follow this net zero agenda, we would literally be living in caves. Now, you could imagine the firestorm that created. But what it was weird about it, Sheila, was Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, OPEC nations were the only people standing up for Canadian and U.S. citizens and going against not only the science nonsense that they present, but also the policy impact. Who would have ever thought the OPEC nations would be our saviors, and they were the only ones fighting for us?
Here's what surprised me, how much reference there is to, again, something we heard from very similar lockstep to the 92 Rio summit, when there was a lot of talk about the Earth, the great goddess. Also, Canada signed on an agreement back then called Canada's Commitment to Earth Worship. I'm going to play a shocking clip of Maurice Strong. And of course, you know, he doesn't get a lot of traction anymore, but he was really the progenitor of all this. And do you notice now we're involving, of course, the Pope? I wrote a whole chapter of the patron saint of the green movement here. He was actually paying Catholic churches to go green. You know, he did this big climate encyclical back in 2013, and he was talking about Catholics need to lead the charge because we know that humans are the one causing global warming at the time, and then climate change, climate weirding, climate disruption, climate crisis. I mean, does this get old at any time, T. Mark?
Well, they always have a new twist on everything. It's kind of like, you know, it's not the same sequel every year because they're always, you have to give them points for cleverness. Now, at this summit, you had the World Health Organization. And right before it began, Sheila, they had 200 medical journals led by the British Medical Journal, the most prestigious medical journal in the world. They must be experts. We should all listen to them. They were urging the World Health Organization and the United Nations to declare climate change a public health threat. And that's a novel way of looking at it, because what they want to do is they want to merge climate change into the public health tyranny that we experienced with COVID, whether it's stay-at-home orders or lockdowns or mask mandates. And what they did was, by pushing this, they're taking it out of democracy even more. You know, we didn't get to vote on vaccine mandates and mask mandates and lockdowns and school and church closures and canceling of weddings and funerals and medical procedures. And they want to codify this for climate. And it's not very hard to believe that if the World Health Organization, especially with this looming pandemic treaty coming up in, I guess, the next meetings in Geneva, Switzerland, the end of May, and if this goes through in the United States and Canada, believe me, we are going to be kissing the ass of the World Health Organization. We're going to be sucked, you know, to that organization. And what they're going to do is they can have Bill Gates-funded scientists at the WHO declare a global climate emergency, and we could be subject to global travel restrictions, global food restrictions, more severe global, probably planned blackouts, as the LA Times has suggested. We need planned blackouts in order to meet emission goals. And during this conference, CNN, of all things, is if to go along with this idea of limiting your freedom of movement under a public health tyranny, actually had an article in CNN Travel about carbon passports being necessary to limit your travel and make sure you don't take too many international flights, domestic flights, and you would have government issuing these passports that would monitor your travel and cut you off when you hit your limit. And I'm sure they're going to come up with similar designs for meat eating. They're going to come up with similar designs for gas-powered car driving. We already have in the United States, state of Washington, right after this summit concluded, has proposals to jail people for continuing to use gas-powered leaf blowers, gas-powered lawnmowers, and other landscaping equipment. If they're willing to jail you for landscaping equipment, you don't think they're willing to jail you for too many flights or jail you for eating too many hamburgers? This truly is a dystopian worldview that's getting advanced. And here's the idiocy of it all. 190 nations, like clapping seals, go along with it. You know, your prime minister, my president, Senate delegation. We had probably the most embarrassing delegation at this COP28. Kamala Harris opens up the COP28 meeting by declaring the U.S. is going to increase their pledge to $3 billion to the UN Climate Slush Fund. All Kamala Harris did was guarantee more money going into the UN Slush Fund, and then the UN will be paying world leaders who are best able to keep their citizens locked in poverty in Africa, South America, Asia, the money. So they're going to be giving money to leaders who are best able to crush development, keep people poor. And that's what the United States' first accomplishment. Then we had Al Gore, John Kerry speak. John Kerry flew in on private jet. By the way, so did Richie Rich, the Prime Minister of England, Richie Sunak, the UK Foreign Secretary, Prince Charles. They all flew in separate private jets, even though they all came from basically the same place outside of London. John Kerry and Al Gore called for the end of coal. They called for the end of gas. And they pushed this whole idea, despite the fact that 80% of the world's energy comes from fossil fuels, they pushed the idea of a phase out of global fossil fuels. By the way, you can go back 100 years, Sheila, 80% of our energy, global energy, came from fossil fuels. But somehow, in the next 10 to 15 years, they're going to phase out all fossil fuels, and we're going to live in a utopian world where energy is clean and green and cheap, and everyone's going to be happy, and you'll own nothing, and you'll be happy, and you'll have no privacy, and life will never be better, and you won't be eating meat, and everything you want will be delivered by drone. Oh, wait, that is exact quotes from the Great Reset. That's why this summit scared the hell out of me, even more so than previous ones.
Well, if it scared the hell out of you, we're in trouble. And you know, it's funny, I talk about 10 years ago in my book, Green Gospel, when I did talk about Brave New World meets 1984, how, oh, I'm sorry, Mark, you're not allowed to travel this week because you've exceeded your carbon footprint. I mean, I knew this was coming over a decade ago and wrote extensively about the Pope and about Prince Charles, obviously, at the time, and all these New World Order depopulationists, by the way. And I love how they always want us to go first. How about you go first, Al Gore? And then what's really, truly frightening is that you just said it's this dystopian scenario that you're talking about, Mark. Also, you wrote so extensively about it, and I want to really plug the new book at the end because it was so prophetically written and such good timely information. But as you just alluded to, what is Bill Gates doing? He's A, blocking out the sun. He's doing lab-grown meat. Mr. Mass Murdering Eugenicist Bill Gates, whose father, by the way, for people that don't know, was head of Planned Parenthood. And let me tell you, it ain't planning to be a parent. It is absolute, complete evisceration of humans, because we are the carbon they want to get rid of, Mark.
It's absolutely true. And on that point, I've been doing this since climate, pretty much not full time, but started climate in the late 90s, climate full time since 2006. I have not seen anything. You just said you are the carbon they want to eliminate in a peer reviewed journal at the conclusion of COP28. And this was my headline until earlier this week at Climate Depot. There's a study out in the journal PLOS, which I think they should lose the L and just call it POS, the piece of shit journal. But anyway, it's an actual peer-reviewed journal. Human breath contributes to global warming. Our breath, exhaling CO2 and contains methane and contains nitrous oxide, contributes to atmospheric warming. They did an actual study.
Wow.
They calculated how many times humans breathe. I think it's like 14 breaths a minute, if I got that number right. That sounds about right. But not only did they do that, now it's exactly what you said. We are the carbon they want to eliminate. Now, think about this for a second. Humans inhale oxygen. We exhale carbon dioxide. But we also breathe in and out methane and nitrous oxide, which they're worried about as greenhouse gases. Methane is called the irrelevant greenhouse gases by scientists. But still, they're trying to scare us about that. That's how they're going after meat eating, too. And it's not just our breathing. It's our other end, if you know what I'm saying. So they're talking about flatulence as well. And here's the thing. If you think back to COVID, what did they do with masking and the whole premise of lockdowns and social distancing? They were weaponizing human beings and our human breath. We had Scientific American earlier this year talk about human urine or human pee being a climate agent because it contained too much nitrous oxide. So they're going after our inhalation, our exhalation, our bodily fluids, flatulence, you name it. And they're doing it in the most insane way. Here's the new twist. Remember, I said they always make it interesting. This study that I just cited in the journal PLOS actually broke it down by identity politics. Africans have more warming gases in their breath than Asians.
Oh,
and boy. Women have more warming agents in their breath than men. So women are full of hot air. I guess any man could have told you that. Basically racist that African. And it brings a whole new spin to when Al Gore told Bill Gates 2014 at the Bill Gates funded depopulation event. He said, Africa's projected to have more people than China and India combined by mid-century. And we need ubiquitous fertility management to basically make sure Africans don't repopulate that much. And now we have a study coming out saying Africans have the highest warming agents in the breath. This is pretty scary stuff. Now, what they didn't say, and here's where I got them. This was behind the times, because what if a man transitions to a woman, identifies as a woman, will his breath actually then increase in warming just by that? And if they say no, that it's biological, then they're not actually woke. This study would probably have to be retracted.
Listen, folks, this is really important because the late, great Dr. Tim Ball, who is really a mentor of mine, always did go back to this piece around carbon. See, carbon is a black sooty solid. So they never tell you a carbon tax, carbon footprint, carbon this, carbon that. Let's face it, they're demonizing plant food, Mark. I mean, did you ever think you'd get taxed for breathing?
It's really, again, this surprised even me. To have actual academics, with there was like 3 or 4 co-authors, getting funding, having journal editors read through this, having peer reviewers sign off, and they actually publish this thing. I don't know. I mean, this surprised even me. I just got to say that. And it's incredible because it's all bullshit. And you don't need a science degree. There's no way. In the past, scientists have analyzed this, and humans have basically a net. You inhale, you're basically inhaling, exhaling. There's no net total emissions from human. Now, human activity, if you're driving cars and you're heating your home and air conditioning, and that's a different issue. But the actual act of breathing. So this is just another way, I think, to go after the number of humans. Remember, the UN's on record, I think it was a 1994 Egypt conference, saying the carrying capacity of the Earth is only about 1 billion. I interviewed Hans Schulenhuber, the German Nazi. I'm sorry, the German advisor. No, I didn't say the N-word. Nazi. But he actually calls for the about 1 billion million people as a carrying capacity of the Earth, the optimum number of people. Same people like Jane Goodall and other prominent environmentalists have that 1 billion number. Well, that would eliminate about 7 billion people. Just this year, Sheila, the New Yorker magazine, prominent corporate mainstream publication of the establishment, profiled the voluntary human extinction movement and its founder. Now, just before you think he's too radical, he doesn't believe in killing existing people, but he wants to make it through sterilization and other methods to make sure that we don't reproduce. That he wants to reduce the population, you know, by like 90% through attrition, not necessarily killing people now. So he's a moderate in the movement.
So here's the thing. These are really neo-Malthusian snake oil salesmen that have, you know, they continue to press this issue, Mark. But it's shocking to me that the Pope and now, of course, the King, oh, isn't that special with these inbred royal family hucksters that they are. And here's the incredible thing about it is people don't seem to question science. But as we know, even the United Nations says they're not a scientific body. They're not even they're supposed to be apolitical. And yet, member Regina Pachuri, the railroad engineer who used to head up the UN, said, the United Nations, it's my dharma, it's my religion. And, yes. You know, this is incredible that Al Gore went on record in his book, and yes, I actually suffered through reading the book, Earth in the Balance. He said, the great goddess mother has a plague that is cancer, and the infestation is human beings. I mean, Al Gore has said, what, every 10 years that we've only got 10 more years. When does the line cross of absolute, complete absurdity, Mark? Because at this point, I mean, even Biden is saying last week, well, we want to phase out the gas-powered car. That's been the plan all along, is to go back to this, as Maurice Strong alluded to at the summit, a wilderness area for the great goddess, and have everyone riding a bike in these micro, well, I see it in Vancouver, these smart cities are already constructing. The smart cities, these stack and packs, they want you out of the rural area into these densely populated stack and packs with all the techno dictatorship you can handle. I mean, is that truly scary, Mark?
Yeah, it really is. You mentioned Saudi Arabia. Yeah, Saudi Arabia has these prototypes, 200 stories high, real narrow. They go through the desert for miles. And you would basically, it's like a prison. You would check in and never check out. Your whole world would be monitored, regulated, surveilled. And it's the ultimate in keeping carbon footprints for people small, and along with 15-minute cities and all these other proposals. But here's the thing, Sheila. The reality, the reason I call it psychotic, because it's a break from reality. If you look at the definition of psychotic, we have now South Africa being praised for meeting its net zero climate goals. Do you know why? It's not because they moved to fracking or they have more efficient energy. They had unintentional blackouts throughout the year. And because everything was shut off and went dark, they were able to reduce their emissions and they met their net zero goals. And they're being applauded for that. The LA Times is openly calling for that. The Biden administration globally with this EV mandate, it's literally tanked everywhere you look. Even EV companies getting massive millions of dollars, solar panel companies now from all these subsidies are still going bankrupt, even though they banned their competition. If all these things are so great, solar, wind, electric cars, why do they have to ban the competition? Why are we banning gas-powered cars? Why are we banning coal, oil, gas? Because they're not that great. It'd be like a football team saying, we're the greatest that ever played. We're the greatest team of all time. And they show up at the stadium and there's 100,000 fans and they're out there and they're like, well, where's the other team? And they're like, well, we banned the other team from playing. We don't need to play them. We're the greatest of all time. That's what they're doing. And that's what they're trying to force. It's a dystopian reality. And it's across the board. But what's going to happen is they're not going to say, well, we failed. We need to redo policy. they're going to say, this is proof that we haven't committed ourselves enough and that we're not spending nearly enough. President Obama, to give you an example, spent $80 billion in 2009 on green stimulus. And we ended up with multiple bankruptcies, Democratic donors. Al Gore grew most of his wealth from this huge increase of his wealth from all these green subsidies because he had invested, the government gave money to all the companies Al Gore had recommended just a year before. The Washington Post actually did an article about this, how Gore recommended these companies and they were the ones that got the initial stimulus. And a lot of these were backed by Democratic donors and a Democratic president. I mean, it's just corruption through and through. But that was only $90 billion. Biden comes in now and we're up to like several hundred billion. And now you have with triggers in these laws and bureaucracy to go into the trillions in the next decade. So they've learned their lesson, but they're still failing. So the new lesson is we need to go even more. And that's why there's a think tank in Europe that just came out and said we need to spend $76 trillion to meet the net zero goals for the green energy transition. $76 trillion, these are just made up numbers. It's larger than any scale economies combined together. It's insane numbers, but they're saying it because the more they fail, the more is proof that they didn't do it right. That's the same thing with the Eastern Bloc, Soviet Union, and socialism. Socialism fails wherever it's tried. Well, it wasn't done correctly there. And that's what they'll say here. It wasn't done correctly because we did inadequate investment. Even though this is about 30 times more than President Obama spent, we still need another 100 times more than Biden. And then it'll work. Then we'll reach that utopia.
In such a sale point you just made, we'll reach that utopia. And from President Obama, who, by the way, Obama Nation of Desolation, he was the one that said we'll bankrupt the coal industry. Al Gore invested heavily in all these companies that, you know, the biggest huckster going. But these carbon credit and subsidies for these Teslas, for example, you have to buy carbon credits. The batteries, I vetted this from a Florida dealership for a guy to get a new battery, was $70,000, in some cases $50,000. They blow up, they catch fire. You can't put them out because of the cobalt and the other noxious chemicals in them. A Florida fireman told me, Sheila, a car burned for 6 days and it kept reigniting. These things are death traps, these Teslas. Wind and solar, we know the circadian rhythms, they're killing whales, they're bird chopping, flip-flopping, disgusting. James Dillingpole calls them bat slicing, bird chopping, eco-crucifixes. I mean, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah,
you know, really, when you think about it, Mark, it's just so insidious.
It's so insidious, and it's so in the face of just engineering, logic, economics. Again, 80% of our energy for the last century has come from fossil fuels, and they think they're going to just some magically wave a wand and we're going to have this utopia. But they know it's not a utopia. I mean, when they talk about it, and when this whole idea of the Great Reset, you will own nothing, be happy, you'll go nowhere, everything you want will be delivered by drone. That's a scary vision, because what they're saying is you have to be boxed in. You're not going to have freedom of speech. You're not going to have freedom of movement. You're not going to have plentiful energy. You're going to have very monitored diet that's going to be ensured to be sustainable and feeds the bugs. You mentioned Bill Gates. It's just important to bring this up. Bill Gates is America's largest farmland owner, very closely followed by China, farmland. And Jeff Bezos. Now, what is Bill Gates, as America's largest farmer, what's he up to? Well, he told MIT Technology Review that he wants all of the Western nations, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Europe, United States, to be eating synthetic beef and meat. Bill Gates and Richard Branson have invested billions in bringing lab-grown meat. Now, we have to distinguish this from the Impossible Burger and the vegetable oil processed burger, which even CNN nutritionists said aren't healthy for you. You know, all these lefty organic people and progressives are like, oh, I want organic and I go to Starbucks and I want everything. And then they're eating all this processed crap. Well, anyway, Bill Gates' vision of this lab-grown meat, to hear this out, because it's important to understand the process. They get stem cells from a cow, a pig, a sheep, mix it with the fetal blood of those animals, put it into a petri dish. Then they put it into a steel vat, let it fester. It grows into an amorphous blob without face, without eyes, without bone structure. It's a sort of amorphous blob like you'd see in the old 1950s sci-fi Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And then they add antibiotics, coloring, texture, and they have 3D printer print up the final product. If you've seen those videos of the chicken nuggets, how they, I guess it's called the purple goo or green goo, and how they make those, this puts those to shame. Here's the interesting, at the end product, when they do the 3D printer, if it's done right, it pretty much looks like a healthy piece of meat, maybe a little too perfect. And it's technically meat. because it's derived genetically from the stem cells, the byproduct of the actual animal. But would you eat that? And here's the thing, as America's largest farmland owner, as America's one of the world's largest billionaires, somehow Bill Gates is getting this meat approved for human consumption. The FDA, Food and Drug Administration in the U.S., for the first time in human history in the U.S., has approved lab-grown meat for human consumption, beginning with chicken. I don't know about Canada, but I think Europe is on, it's just approved it as well. There's the other, one last thing on this lab-grown meat that they're banning regular meat for. This is separate from insects. Scientists are worried because in order to make this profitable, they want to grow the meat, in quotes, in a steel vat as fast as possible. So they're encouraging rapid cell reproduction. And this has many cancer experts concerned because this is, they're calling it tumor meat, because essentially you're going to be eating stuff and ingesting stuff that was genetically altered to rapidly reproduce. And if your body senses this as a foreign agent, I mean, you're talking some scary, unknown potential side effects of this Frankenfood.
Wow, Frankenfood, indeed. We'll call it Gates of Hell, Bill Gates of Hell
Gates Food. Of hell food. Yeah, yeah.
But here's the really frightening part of this is, think about this, folks. You have Bill Gates writing a book, don't forget, on how to avoid a climate disaster. I'm sure that was a real insightful book. And then you have this supposed Microsoft, air quotes, philanthropist who is saying things like, I want to buy up all the farmland. Okay, that's truly, truly frightening what Mark is saying, folks. And now this lab-grown meat, just because it's stem cells, and he's the biggest contributor to things like, by the way, the Pfizer vaccine. And I wrote a whole chapter in my newest book, Technogeddon, the technological Armageddon that's coming, because with the AI and the, you know, this guy's a computer virus expert, and now he's an expert on viruses. I mean, who appointed this jackass to play God with our food? And then you've got this James Bond villain, Klaus Schwab. You'll own nothing and like it. Meanwhile, they're building the biggest cicada and cricket plants in the world in both Utah and now Ontario, Canada. And here's the kicker of all. And Mark, you touched on this earlier. These jackasses are not going for the impossible burger when they go to the climate summits, these confabs. You covered this. They're going for the real burgers.
Yes, in fact, both in Madrid UN Climate Summit, we did a whole segment on it. They had a Burger King on site, and there were lines. And we interviewed Burger King employees. We interviewed the UN delegates. They were chomping down on all the meat. They didn't even offer the fake vegetable oil impossible burger at this. So there were hypocrites there. I even interviewed Harrison Ford. I actually got up to him. He was at the summit. He spoke. And I asked him about how he used to brag about 10 years prior, or maybe 8 years prior back, about how he'd fly up the coast to get a hamburger. And I said, wasn't that hypocritical? And his answer was brilliant, because he said, I'm a vegan now, or I'm a vegetarian now. So it's kind of like he's repented for his past ways. But at this summit, they were serving, and I went to the on-site restaurants. They had an array of meats that you could eat, and they were served all over the UN conference. No one was serving bugs. No one was serving lab-grown meat. I didn't see tofu either. This was, you remember, this was held in the United Arab Emirates. At one point, Dubai, as I mentioned, I opened the show, but the OPEC nations were actually championing fossil fuels and thus human advancement. This city of Dubai in the United Arab Emirates was amazing. It reminds me of a bygone era in the West when they embraced unbridled economic development, beautiful architecture. They weren't infected with all the, now there's negatives. It's probably an authoritarian government. There's some restrictions on free speech and there's human rights issues in this country. However, there were no homeless encampments. There were no open air drug markets. And when I say none, I mean, I talk to cab drivers, I talk to residents, I'd see kids running around 10 o'clock at night in city blocks. I mean, it just wasn't crime. People would leave their phones and wallets at the beach and walk around. I guess they have very strict rules for crime, for one thing. But they weren't infected with that ideology. And it, you know, it's a very wealthy country, but it was just, it was refreshing to see a country just embrace unbridled economic activity and development. And they did it spectacular. The world's tallest building was there. I went up on top of that, 144 stories, I believe it was.
Wow.
And it's just it's an engineering marvel. You could never build a city or maintain a city like that in the West today. It would be a hellhole. We both know that.
Well, but here's the thing I want people to consider. Did you ever see the commercial where the lady is plugging that volt in and he goes, what's the power source here? And then it turns out it's coal. How did they think these chargers, these electric vehicle chargers work? And by the way, once again, these Teslas, Mark, I don't know if you're seeing these stories about them being fire-fueled serious encamped death traps. And again, these fires, now this is important to think about, carbon credits and, get this, government subsidies. You take away the subsidies on solar, wind. How do you, I mean, this, there's big money when you jump into bed with big eco.
There is. Okay, good point. This is a key point. These UN summits, when I was first going back in the early 2002, Johannesburg Earth Summit, 2004, it was Buenos Aires, 2005 was Montreal, 2006 was Kenya, 2007 was Bali, Indonesia. I was working for the U.S. Senate, $16,000 round trip, business class flight, the whole bed that lied nice. Down, warm cookies, milk, and all that delivered, oceanfront accommodations with a hot tub and a cold tub on the beach. I mean, luau's every night. Anyway, my point being, and mentioning that, is these conferences evolved from the activists. And you'd see all the environmental groups, and it was a lot of just, you know, the Greenpeace and Sierra Club and other international groups. They've evolved now into basically a corporate takeover. And I'd say this happened about the last 5-7 years. Now you go, and there's an entire green zone, is what they call it. And it's not for environment. It's all about green as in cash. You have major manufacturers of everything, all the EV manufacturers, sustainable aviation, sustainable fuels. You have all of the solar and wind. And this is a giant green tech engineering investment boondoggle, is what this UN conference have turned into. And why not? You mentioned solar, wind. They're not like they're making money on their own. They fail immediately. They're failing with trillions in subsidies. But the individual investors who show up, make the connections, can suck the government teat from the subsidies, from the mandates, from all the green energy push. And that's exactly really what these conferences. So here's the weird part. In a way, when you walk through and meet the people, they're less radical than they used to be, because most of these are just self-serving businessmen who want to make money from the government. They want to be there, you know, they want to suck off that tea. And I'm not going to fault them for that. And Lord Monckton and I went and had a debate with two global warming alarmists in London last year at a green entrepreneur investment. And I was expecting like, oh, the audience is going to be all against this. About half or more of the audience was cheering on the climate skepticism. These were green tech, very wealthy individuals, investors and companies that were being subsidized by government mandates. They didn't agree with any of the actual underlying. They were just there to benefit off the policy. And so the organizers of the event were stunned. They thought they had a bunch of climate activists there, but it doesn't work that way. And that's what these UN conferences, they've turned into business opportunities right. with corporate sponsorship from Bank of America and Google, and all right on down the Fortune 500. You can see the list of all the corporate sponsors of these UN summits now.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned these corporate sponsors. Look at Apple just did in terms of, we'll put that article up, the mother goddess, again, the Pope. By the way, I don't know if you know this, but the Canadian government has a Ministry of Climate Change. Get this. He's one of the most disgusting creeps ever in the universe. He used to work for Earth First and, you know, these World Wildlife Charters and all this disgusting Greenpeace. And although, you know, I mean, Patrick Moore talks about when he worked for Greenpeace, how disgusting it was. And you've got the David Suzuki's and all these, the Michael E. Mann, the same green swindlers always attend. Is the hysteria getting more hype, do you think? Or are people just absolutely fed up with this? Because don't forget, Mark, you've got to confess your climate sins. I mean, this is just getting to be, well, a green gospel.
Yes, green gospel. Christ. You know, that is a great phrase to describe this. The rhetoric, it's what's interesting has happened is post-COVID, they're no longer really interested in convincing the public. They don't give a flying about that because they know that none of that matters. They don't care about having the Green New Deal voted on or anything. They're imposing this. That's why I mentioned the 200 medical journals and the World Health Organization being on hand. They want to impose this through public health edicts, through corporate government collusion, through environment, social governance, ESG, and they don't need to convince the public. They don't need politicians to vote for any of this. Gas-powered car bans, restrictions on agriculture, meat bans. They just don't need it because they've figured out a way to bypass all of that. And because of that, they just make the most absurd fact-free concepts now. They'll just say stuff that this tipping points continue. You know, we have this many years left and all that. It's just, it's utter nonsense, but they now don't care anymore. And by the way, we did a protest, Sheila. You know, we've heard of Just Stop Oil. Well, we did Just Stop Net Zero. And I can show you the video. It's we decided to go out to this summit and we blockaded a COP28 bus and laid down in the street. And you can watch that. It was kind of silly, but I hope your viewers and that enjoy our COP28 protest from the climate skeptics who would turn the tables on the Just Stop Oil activists.
Well, you know, here's the thing, Mark. You've been doing this a long time. Tell us the part that really hit you when you were there as you've, you know, of course, over the years, a person gets a little jaded because you know this crap is going on. But when you see actual things that are coming out that even scared you, when you walked away from it all and the dust settled, you know, give us your thoughts.
Well, it's just pure delusion. 10 years ago, you had a bunch of activists and you had the UN sort of just making some meaningful gestures. And it was more of like a danger down the road, I would say. But now it's here. It's now. It's happening. So when I go to these, they're winning. They've already got France to ban flights of 2.5 hours or less. They've already got 15-minute cities expanding. They've already got the corporate government collusion and executive branch dictates banning gas-powered cars. They've already got the war on high-yield agriculture. They've already got the meat restrictions. They've already got censorship like they've never had in the previous history of these UN summits. Last year, they announced the UN partnered with Google, that they own the science and they'll make sure the world knows it. So I look at this and it scares me because they're winning and the progress they've made is beyond their wildest hopes. And I think that's the key point here, Sheila. You're asking me what concerns me the most. They don't even expect to have this kind of progress. And all of it was done through COVID, March of 2020, emergency decree. They saw, as John Kerry said, the parallels between COVID and climate are screaming at us. They are. And that's when you had the youth climate activists, Jamie Margolis and Teen Vogue magazine say, if we can shut down the world for a virus, we can do the same for climate. And the UN knows that. That's why they're all in on the Great Reset. That's why the World Economic Forum is there. That's why they want to make this, roll it into a public health threat. They have a game plan that we are not ready to fight back on. And we have no one on our side. I would argue most of your conservative politicians in Canada aren't prepared to fight this. I know most of ours in the U.S. are either clueless or want to capitulate. So that's what scares me, is just the advancements they've made in 3 years since March of 2020. It's phenomenal.
Well, and you'd think the biggest Christian, quote, air quotes, church in the world, the Catholics might clue in that the Pope has been pushing this. I mean, he's a total socialist. He's the first Jesuit Pope who took his papal title from St. Francis of Assisi. His name is George Bergoglio. By the way, last week, blessing gay marriage too. I mean, what planet are we on when the head of the supposed Christian representative of the free world is lockstep with the United Nations? It is a really creepy, as you use the word, dystopian nightmare. When you have people demonizing CO2, and it's the God-given necessary byproduct for human life on this planet, that truly is spooky, isn't it?
It is. Now, right before this COP28, I was at an event in Baltimore, and it was an event to speak to the Pope and to Catholics across the world that the Pope was wrong on science, and some people call him the Red Pope, not
right,
because he wears,
yes,
you know, red as in communist or Marxist.
Yep.
And I had an event where I had the honor and privilege to meet and speak at the same podium with Dr. John Clauser, the 2022 Nobel Prize winning physicist. He gave a speech it was a Catholic event that I was invited to speak at, along with John Clauser, who, by the way, is an atheist. So he wasn't there for any religious reason. He was just there to say that the Pope and the church and this whole direction is wrong. And we had the coverage from the New York Times, the Washington Post. Dr. John Clauser was featured in the Washington Post from this event, saying a Nobel Prize winner expresses climate dissent. I still can't believe the Washington Post allowed that headline to be printed. But it was interesting because this was right before the event and the Pope was doubling down. The Pope was supposed to attend the COP28 conference, but because of health issues, he couldn't. But right before it, he issued a new encyclical on climate. doubling down. He's all for this agenda. He is from a South American Jesuit socialist sort of upbringing. The UN had the Pope at their solutions. They didn't need to convince him of it. He didn't care about the science. All he had to hear was wealth redistribution, socialism, global Marxism, and the Pope was all in, and he was more than happy to parrot all the scientific nonsense, and which is what he's done. His scientific stuff is ridiculous. It's about 2 or 3% of his encyclicals. It's embarrassing. It's regurgitated UN stuff. But all the Pope really cares about is he likes that globalist UN agenda of socialism and poverty and equity where everyone's miserable.
Of course, this buzzword wealth redistribution, right? Because they always like to redistribute your wealth. And by the way, I think it was Margaret Thatcher that said socialism is great until you run out of other people's money.
Yes, exactly. The interesting thing about that is when they talk about wealth redistribution, it's not like a poor African is going to benefit from wealth redistribution. It just means that that money is going to go to UN bureaucrats, mid-level EU bureaucrats, all this global establishment that they've set up, and they'll just get handouts. That's all the poor African's going to get. And they're going to get, this is a key point, and I've been making this, and some people's eyes roll. If I'm an African leader, and I have a choice between, say, the United States comes in with their Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, and visits Zambia, and looks at huts made of mud and dung and says they're doing it right. Or Vice President Kamala Harris comes in and talks about how Africa is the model of development and they're living earth friendly versus making a deal with the devil, China, where they come in to a poor African nation like the Congo. They build airports, they build infrastructure, they build highways, they build hospitals, they give out tons of jobs, even if they're underage kids and they have horrible wages. But in the end, if you're that African leader, are you going to accept white, wealthy colonial rule where you can't make the same mistakes of, you know, prosperity and development? Or are you going to accept from the West, or are you going to accept China's deal where, yeah, you might be a satellite state of China for generations in the future, but hey, it's immediate help and it's actual development. I think China's going to win that battle every single time.
Well, yeah, I mean, Justin Castro was just on record saying, we like China's dictatorship and they've got it right on the climate thing. But what they don't talk about when Alex Newman had to suffer through one of Al Gore's speeches years ago, he was talking about how China got it right on their population, one child policies. You mentioned, you know, these Paul Ehrlichs and of course, Maurice Strong said, I got a little bit in trouble years ago. It was a BBC 1972 interview where he says, I got a little bit of trouble when I suggested that parents should have license to have babies. I mean, this stuff is just straight out of the pits of hell. And I think really the church needs to be really pushing back. That's how things used to be. The church used to be separate from church and state, but now it's just one big disgusting mishmash. But Mark, very quickly in the last part of the show, I want you to tell the new listeners, tell everybody about your Great Reset, these incredible books, the must-get books, and Climate Hustle 2. Just plug all your stuff and where folks can follow you.
Well, my first book was Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. It's sort of like a coffee table book on climate. It's a lot of fun facts, figures, goes through the Children Climate Campaign, the corruption of the UN, the whole process, Hollywood, hypocrisy. Second book was on the green energy fiasco called Green Fraud. That came out 2021. And last year was my book, The Great Reset, Global Elites in the Permanent Lockdown. Highly recommend it. I actually endorsed by Alex Jones, who wrote another book, his own book on The Great Reset, and said, my book was better. He said this a couple months ago. And he recommended everyone read. I'm actually getting Amazon reviews saying Alex Jones was right. I came here to read this and Mark's book is great. Anyway, and my website is climatedepot.com. I'm on Twitter at @climatedepot. So thank you so much, Sheila.
Well, listen, we want to just thank you for, you've been going to these cult meetings. Well, I think last year was your 20th anniversary. I mean, that's incredible, the work that you've done to expose this green hell, as Steve Molloy calls it. It really is truly, well, between green fraud, green hell, my book, Green Gospel, it is a fusion of just, it is green hell, really, isn't it, what we're up against?
Green hell, and it's a dystopian hell at that, you know.
it truly is, but because of people like you, Mark, fighting it. I know it seems like a thankless banging your head against the wall, but it is guys like you that are getting the traction, even on places like Tucker Carlson, Lori Ingram. We just want to thank you. And we, you know, we pray for you too, because there really is not a political solution for a spiritual battle. And I mean, we are up against some real devils, and we continue to thank you for the work that you do. And I want to really ask people to also support, you know, get behind Mark, support him if you have the means financially. I've got all that information linked below as well as up on your screen. Again, Mark, thank you for everything that you do. We just want to thank you for coming on, and we look forward to you coming back real soon.
All right. Thank you, Sheila. Appreciate it.